Let's talk about this transformative experience that you had, Daniel Pinchbeck, this very first time that you started having visions of Quetzalcoatl. Mm-hmm. From Quetzalcoatl. Because I love the idea of Quetzalcoatl. I mean, I love that old movie. Did you ever see Q?
Never saw it, actually, no.
If you had other people have referenced it for you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'd like it just because it's all about New York and Quetzalcoatl. You can't beat that. But, I mean, it's the kind of thing where, you know, for some people, this is a very significant beast. Would you call it a mythical beast? What would you call it? How should we just think of the winged serpent?
I would call it a archetype or an archetypal god form.
Okay. And so
a little bit like Avalokiteshvara, who's the Tibetan Buddha of compassion. I mean, that's another kind of archetypal god form that then takes human embodiment from time to time.
Perhaps like our angels? I mean, in Western culture, the idea of divine beings which take a human form in both the biblical perspective, but also just kind of in a cultural perspective?
Something like that.
Okay. Talk about that first experience, and what were you doing when you had it? And, I mean, is it important to talk about the medicines that you were taking at the time?
Yeah, I was down in Brazil. I guess this experience started in Brasilia. And I was working with a Santa Daime, and I was absolutely hating these rituals. There were these rituals where you had to wear white and sing all night with these bright lights. And, I mean, it's a lot to explain because it sort of comes at the end of the journey that I describe in my book. And I'd been working with this Mayan calendar material and these ideas of Jose Arguelles, which is about this kind of potential for this consciousness shift, which he connects with a potential for a new calendar. That actually we have a wrong relationship to time, which has been embodied, sort of materialized in a desynchronized calendar, and that we'd actually have to move to a different relationship to time, which would then be represented by a different calendar if we wanted to kind of change our world situation. And I'd just been, you know, mulling over a huge amount of data and information. I'd also been studying the crop circles and alien abductions, and then really just trying to come to a deeper, more profound understanding of what all of this phenomena meant, as well as synchronicities and so on. And in a way, like I'd say the whole experience has been a little bit like, you know, recognizing myself as almost a character in a story. Like right now I basically just feel that, you know, I'm coasting through a kind of narrative, a kind of meta-narrative in which I'm a character. And as part of that character, I seem to be embodying a certain element of this Quetzalcoatl kind of energy or consciousness. So that's what began to came through. And it came through specifically as a kind of transmission, which explained to me that all these kind of things that I'd been figuring out were connected, and that they were connected to this moment that we're in now, which is the apocalypse, a term which literally means uncovering or revealing. And it's kind of the end of a world cycle, and that we're on this verge of transitioning to kind of a new form or kind of realization of human consciousness.
Well, again, though, give us a little bit more about what that transmission looked and or felt like. What was it?
There was really no look. It was a voice in my head that just spoke to me, and the voice introduced itself as Quetzalcoatl, and it began to download this information to me. And, you know, of course, I'd heard about these experiences. I mean, Jose Arguelles had many of these experiences with Paco Vatan, who was this 8th century Mayan king. I'd never expected or imagined that such a thing would happen to me. And for me, like, my way of understanding this experience was very much involved the ideas of Carl Jung about archetypal material. And that actually it's very, very difficult when this kind of higher material, the archetype of the self, is seeking to incarnate in the ego, and often there is this kind of voice or this presence that seems outside of oneself. And he talks about how it's very, very difficult for the ego to kind of be supple enough to take in this higher information. And that was what it was for me. It was really kind of a horrible struggle. I mean, to a certain extent, I felt aggrandized that, you know, Quetzalcoatl wanted to have this relationship with me. But on the other extent, I felt totally belittled and almost like annihilated that everything had been a kind of setup, you know. And, yeah, I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, if you think about the word Maya, you know, that the Mayan culture has named Maya is already pretty interesting because Maya is this term from Eastern mysticism, from Buddhism and Hinduism, which means, we sort of think of it as meaning the world of illusion, but really it means the magical creative power of the gods in creating this reality that we're in. So for me, it's almost like we're living in a kind of virtual hologram, and Quetzalcoatl is just part of the sort of operative system that we're in.
So the voice spoke to you in English?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah. Was there a characteristic to it? Did you feel like this was something that was external or internal?
Right. Yeah. Well, I would say, you know, both in a sense. I mean, I guess that's been one of the ways that I've kind of come to think about a lot of stuff is that where we impose dualisms, there's actually a more kind of meshed paradoxical relationship. So in a sense, I'd been like pushing myself towards these initiatory experiences, and it was almost like a kind of like the way metal filings are kind of organized by a magnet to form patterns.
Right.
You know, so it was like this thing had been acting upon me from a distance and had kind of pulled me into its force field. And then this transmission, it was just a very strong, very kind of like emphatic tone to the whole thing, and much more certain of itself than I'm usually certain of anything.
It sounds like a conversion experience.
Well, I don't know if I'm really converted to anything. I mean, one thing I really tried to do in this book is to leave open doubt and skepticism, which
sure.
includes my own doubt and skepticism. And I think that we get really stuck on belief, and in many levels, belief is a kind of enemy that we have to interrogate. I mean, Carl Jung said, you know, I believe only what I know. You know, and what I know is that I had this experience, and it certainly seemed very compelling, but I wouldn't give it some kind of absolute truth content.
I think that would be, I mean, just from my perspective, being through seminary, I think that puts too fine a point on belief. I think belief always comes with a component of doubt. It's the difference between knowing. If you know something for a fact, there is no belief required. If you believe something, then there's an element of faith. There's a sort of a leap of trust that this is true. And I think when I use conversion, I don't mean that in some sense that it's to some new absolutism, but rather it was so transformative that you can't be what you were before.
It definitely threw me for a loop.